Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. But first of all, a public service announcement. Jim, it is February 14th, and every self-respecting American male should know what that is. Yes, it is the premiere of Die Hard 5 today. a good day to die hard. So I enjoy my marriage, so I won't be seeing it today. Look forward to that because we love the Die Hard franchise.
It's date night, okay, honey? I'm going, very romantic evening. And then we're shooting up some Russians. Yeah!
What could be better?
Yippee-ki-yay, honey.
Absolutely. All right, on to the good martini here. And, of course, we laid out yesterday the problems with the president's agenda from a conservative perspective. The good news, as a little bit of analysis has been done here by Politico, is that the vast majority of what the president wants to do simply isn't going to happen. So they go through what the president proposed and the prospects of the likelihood of passage. First of all, lifting the minimum wage to $9. Prospect, not good. Urging Congress to pass his climate change cap and trade bill. Prospect, not good. Universal access to preschool, dim. Comprehensive tax reform, the Obama version, so-so. Decent, that's the highest they give, and that's for his pathway to citizenship, which isn't the greatest news for most conservatives. His $40 billion infrastructure program, unlikely. His refinancing mortgages, doubtful. The gun legislation, mixed, because they seem to think he might have some traction on background checks, but the assault weapons ban is pretty much dead. So given the general track record there, Jim, I feel a lot better than I did the other night.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons I'm generally skeptical of this State of the Union address and how it's a lot of grandiose laundry list of proposals, most of which will never get beyond a sheet of paper. I'm sure you remember George W. Bush lamenting our addiction to oil and how we were going to get off that. And at Love Corp Hill, we actually are starting to lessen our consumption of oil due to the wonders of natural gas and fracking. But it didn't come out of any government policy or anything like that. It was that somebody figured out, hey, we can make a lot of money with these new ways of getting natural gas. One of the more fascinating moments of the night was when Barack Obama says, they deserve a vote regarding the various gun control proposals. Gabby Giffords deserves a vote. And going, the victims of Newtown deserve a vote. Who was he talking to? He really should have just pointed to one person in the chamber and said, Harry Reid, these proposals deserve a vote. Because he's the only person who has the opportunity to stop it. He's not saying these proposals must pass. He's simply saying they have to be voted on. Now, if it's a moral imperative that will save lives, I'm very interested to see how casual he is about how okay he seems if he gets voted down. But looking at everything else, I mean, basically, he only needs to address the five least conservative Senate Republicans, the five most conservative Senate Democrats, the 10 folks who are in the middle, and roughly about the same, thing for about 15, 30 people in the House. And they're the ones who are going to decide what gets through. And so in light of that, there's a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors and sound and fury signifying nothing, because in the end, Mr. President, it doesn't matter how much you can get Dianne Feinstein to stand up and applaud for you. It doesn't matter how much you get Nancy Pelosi to stand up and applaud for you. The question is, can you get those folks in the middle, the folks who are the difference between a majority and a minority, to sign on to your legislation? And obviously, a lot of these cases, red state Democrats aren't ready to sign on to stuff like the assault weapons ban. We don't know if the Gang of Eight is going to hold together on the immigration reform proposal. And one of the things that this goes on is that the legislation, as it's described by Marco Rubio, and the legislation as it's described by Chuck Schumer sounds completely different. So at some point, they actually have to put words on paper. And one of these guys is going to be dreadfully disappointed once you get beyond general principles and values and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of these things, look, it's very easy to go up and give a very pretty sounding speech. It's a lot harder to build majorities willing to pass legislation. And Obama's not been nearly as good at that part of the equation, so we shouldn't be surprised to see a lot of these promises and pledges and proposals in the State of the Union end up going nowhere and being, quickly forgotten.
You mentioned Harry Reid, and he's the gateway to getting anything onto the Senate floor, and that's the bad martini today, because despite Republican senators vowing to place holds on specifically Chuck Hagel and John Brennan, Hagel for Defense Secretary, Brennan for CIA Director, Harry Reid has basically decided that I'm just not going to observe these holds. And holds aren't necessarily meant to work forever. I'm not a Senate parliamentarian, so I'm not exactly sure the entire process. But it is meant to slow down the process. And Harry Reid is deciding to ignore that. There are lots of outstanding questions about Benghazi before a lot of people want Chuck Hagel to be confirmed, not to mention the fact that he seemed like a kind of a blithering idiot at his confirmation hearing. And then, of course, there's a lot of ongoing questions about drones and whether they could be used on American citizens in America. John Brennan did not answer that all that clearly at his confirmation hearing. And so Rand Paul is threatening to put a hold on that. But Harry Reid doesn't seem to care, and he's probably going to be able to ram these through by the end of the week.
I think there's a case to be made that the idea that any nominee, any ambassador, any undersecretary, any cabinet member could be held up by a hold. I think there's some people who might say that's putting way too much power in the hands of each individual senator. However, and it's also worth noting that despite, you know, Harry Reid saying, well, the heck with this, I'm going to ignore your holds, at last talk, and you know, by the time people listen to this, it may have changed, it appears Republicans are going to push through with a filibuster of Hagel, and it's not clear that the Democrats have 60 votes to break that filibuster. The argument is, oh, my goodness, a cabinet, you know, filibuster, it's never happened before. This is so, you know, so unprecedented and groundbreaking and extreme. But I mean, honestly, we haven't had a nominee like Chuck Hagel before, who's, you know, going bumbling his way through his confirmation hearing and answering every question of, well, I got to learn more about that. I just don't know much about it. But look, I'm not going to be running anything, which, honest to God, was what he said. And you're looking at that and thinking, no, you're running the Pentagon, sir. Perhaps they did they brief you on what the job entailed? Because you seem really not up to speed on this. I also find fascinating that Harry Reid is apparently saying, look, it's time to put aside this political theater. We are a nation at war. Now, the president said, both in the inaugural and the State of the Union address, that the wars are over. I also seem to remember Harry Reid saying the Iraq war is lost a couple of years ago. But it's kind of interesting that, you know, now we absolutely totally have to give the president, put Chuck Hagel in there as quickly as possible. When if you have doubts about Chuck Hagel saying we are a nation at war, that just unnerves you even more. Chuck Hagel might be tolerable in peacetime if the place was, you know, if the Pentagon was largely running itself. If it's, you know, if we really are in a crisis, you know, does anybody feel after watching that confirmation hearing spectacularly confident about Chuck Hagel in a crisis? You picture him, you know, Mr. Secretary, we have an inbound airliner that we may be under, you know, Al-Qaeda control. I had a memo about that around here somewhere. Hang on a second. I really was supposed to go over the next week's the briefing on the hijacking, so I'll go over our protocols for that sort of, yeah. I mean, look, I exaggerate slightly, but Dan Foster put it pretty well when he said the ceiling for Chuck Hagel is that he's kind of a bumbler, not taken seriously, and everybody underneath him in the Pentagon just kind of rolls their eyes at him. That's the ceiling. That's the best case scenario for him. There's got to be somebody better. You know, Michelle Flournoy, there's got to be somebody who's more up to speed on defense issues than Chuck Hagel is.
On to martini number three now, and Joe Biden spent a lot of time in the third martini lately, but there's good reason for that. The latest addition here comes from Aaron Burnett's program on CNN. The first bit of audio we'll hear is Joe Biden talking to some folks in the Capitol. Not sure if this was just around the time of the State of the Union or when this was, where he's basically saying that this gun legislation isn't actually going to do what they say it's going to do. And then she contrasts it with what he said when he was surrounded by D.C. school children.
What we're going to do is going to fundamentally alter or eliminate the possibility of another mass shooting, or guarantee that we will bring gun deaths down to 1,000 a year from what it is now.
Okay. Even if you agree with what Joe Biden just said, you might find it strange that he'd say his gun control legislation won't stop mass shootings, because he surrounded himself with children who wrote the White House letters about gun violence when he said this 2 weeks ago.
We have a moral obligation to do everything in our power to diminish the prospect that something like this could happen again.
So which is it? Gun control will stop mass shootings or not, Joe Biden?
So good job to Aaron Burnett. And he said nothing we're going to do is going to alter the possibility of these shootings. Jim, that kind of takes the teeth out of your argument.
If you really believe that gun control legislation is going to save lives, then why would you go to the State of the Union and just say it deserves a vote? Why wouldn't you say it deserves to pass? You know, we must pass this. What this comes down to, I think, is that the president and Joe Biden and everyone else in the administration really enjoy demagoguing the gun issue, that if you don't agree with them, you don't care about kindergartners getting killed. However, they don't really want to throw that accusation at, like, Joe Manchin or Heidi Heitkamp or Angus King, the independent senator from Maine who, you know, caucuses with the Democrats. They don't really want to tell the people on their side that they have blood on their hands, et cetera, et cetera. They really just want to aim at the Republicans. So now you're seeing this sudden modulation of the rhetoric. They're suddenly like they're hitting the brakes. They're taking their foot off the gas pedal. The other thing which is in there, which I you know, this is something that I think almost anybody who looked at this issue seriously chewed over after Newtown and came to that conclusion. Folks who read the Morning Jolt will know that for a while I thought about, all right, if you did do the magazine clip ban, if you basically limited people to 10 shots, does that make it more likely that you can stop one of these mass shooters? And the answer is, yeah, maybe on the margins, although keep in mind that almost all of the high-profile mass shooters we've seen in recent years have gone to their shooting sprees with multiple guns. Let's assume, you know, the guy's got two guns and then some more clips. That means they're going to get at least 20 shots off before they have to reload. And of course, anybody knows with just a little bit of training, you can reload within a few seconds. So instead of getting like 30 or 40 shots off before reloading, the next spree shooter will get only 20 shots. Is that improving things? I guess, but we're talking really on the margins here of a slight improvement in the death count and injury count and number of shots that some terrible person gets to shoot off there. So why would you treat this legislation as if it's, you know, a matter of life and death and it's this great thing? And you know, in the end, just as we, faced when we were contemplating the horror of suicide terrorism, somebody who's willing to die and who wants to cause a lot of harm to other people, there's not a lot of ways to stop them. You cannot turn all of society into a fortress. And so you just kind of have to recognize that you live in a dangerous world, and oftentimes the very best way to stop a bad person who wants to kill lots of people is a good person with a gun who either be a cop or some armed citizen who can intervene. And that's just the way the world is. It says something about Biden. I'm thinking we really should name the third martini after him. Let's call it the Joe Biden third crazy martini, just as the bad martini is increasingly being named after Harry Reid. And so I guess we give a kind of a half salute to Biden for acknowledging this. Most of us figured this out from the beginning, and it kind of says that almost the rest of the administration's rhetoric on gun control is, a bunch of happy talk and meaningless nonsense.
And then, of course, the story he told of the teenage girl in Chicago, tragic, tragic story. But Chicago's the most violent city in America, and they've got the toughest gun control laws in America. So
the alleged shooter in that case has, you know, had three arrests, was on probation, and should not have been allowed to own a gun. The police have not revealed how he got his gun. But as I've happily said, I will bet a donut he had his gun illegally. So a gun control law would not have stopped him. So you can't really say, oh, pass this law and we'll stop these tragedies again. Because had any of these laws been in effect, not a single thing would have changed in any of these horrific shootings that have gripped the nation so far.
The sad point that a lot of people aren't getting, at least in the never let a crisis go to waste camp. Jim, have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.